Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is host Richard Benulli. Today is Monday, January 13th. We're very happy and excited to have returning guests, the legendary Martin Armstrong. Martin is the owner of Armstrong Economics and former chairman of Princeton Economics International. He's best known for his economic predictions based on the economic confidence model, which he developed. His website, armstrongeconomics.com, offers a unique perspective intended to educate the general public and organizations on the global economic and political environment underlying trends. The mission is to research historical cyclical patterns and market behavior and timing, price, and crisis to understand better and identify potential future trends using an extensive monetary database and advanced proprietary models. Welcome, Martin.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Great. I thought we'd begin with your thoughts on the potential for the tariffs that are announced by the new U.S. administration coming into power next week, and coupling that with sovereign debt defaults happening globally, what the effect could be on the global economy. You mentioned in this morning's GDP, the potential for global GDP to go down 20% as the global recession goes into 2028. Can you elaborate?
I don't really know who is advising Trump on this, but basically what they've done is they've stated the historical truth that before the income tax, the government was funded just with tariffs. Fine. But that was also before Marxism. Right. So we didn't have all these social programs and things of this nature. You know, the government was much smaller. I mean, even a lot of people misinterpret the Great Depression. You know, why was it so deflationary? U.S. also had a balanced budget. You know, I mean, the rest of the world was going default, you know, in 1931. And we were the only ones that were not. So, I mean, even Britain went into a moratorium, suspended their debt. And that's what pushed the dollar up dramatically, making the Great Depression so great. So we have to understand that. The problem that the tariffs present is that it sounds nice. Okay, we'll protect American jobs, blah, blah, blah. All right. But you put these tariffs on, and then what will happen is you're also going to turn the economies down outside the country. They turn down, we can't sell to them either. Forgetting, you know, even tariffs are yes or no. That's irrelevant. They go into recession, people don't spend money in recessions. They hoard their cash and, you know, for uncertainty. So I think our computers, you know, spot on that we're going into a global recessionary period into 2028. You know, I think whoever's advising Trump, you know, basically should be removed on this issue. You know, and I fear that he could end up historically going down the road of being remembered, you know, like Herbert Hoover. You know, it's, we have to realize we are all connected, you know, and you can't just have a boom in one country and, you know, without anybody else. I mean, it's we're all connected, and what happens in one place will affect other people. I guess the best example of that is that U.S. was virtually bankrupt from the silver Democrats overvaluing silver in the late 1800s. You know, that was William Jennings Bryan, you know, against the gold standard. You know, thou shalt not crucify mankind upon a cross of gold. And that led to all the gold fleeing the United States. And then J.P. Morgan had to lend $100 million in gold in 1896 to bail out the country. We were virtually bankrupt because of that policy. So then by the end of World War I, the U.S. becomes the financial capital. We displaced Britain. By the end of World War II, we end up with 76% of the entire official world gold reserves. All right, so the United States would not have risen like that had it not been for World War I and II. So that's what I mean. External events can alter your domestic economy. And we have to understand this. We are all connected, you know, and so it's very nice. You know, I can run for president. Oh, do you know, I'll promise I won't make it rain on Thursdays or whatever you want to hear. All right. But I can't change the U.S. economy against the trend of the entire world. We're all connected. So we have to, you know, appreciate that. And it's not just simply a domestic policy. Oh, gee, what the Fed's going to do today, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's very nice. But, you know, the Fed can get really seriously swamped, and which is what often happens. For example, you have a building. You want to sell it to me for $10 million, fine. All right. It doesn't really change the domestic economy. But if I'm British and now I come in and I buy your building, I have to bring money into the country. All right. So I'm actually increasing the money supply. It's got nothing to do with the Federal Reserve or the Treasury. You know, I mean, that was like the Japanese bubble in 1989. Everybody was buying there. The same thing in Russia, you know, the Russian collapse. Everybody was buying the GKOs. You're bringing money into the country. You're creating inflation. You're increasing the domestic money supply that way. And then people try to exit, and then there's no bid, and you get the crashes. You know? But I mean, it's so it's a delicate balance, and we have to understand. We have to look at the entire world, not just a single country.
Interesting. And related to this would be the U.S. dollar. I know you've written a lot about the U.S. dollar going higher, pressure from geopolitical events and risks. Then you also have President-elect Donald Trump mentioning his target objective as trying to make the U.S. dollar lower, you know, weaker. How do you look at those two and in what time frame?
Look, this is nothing new. They tried that with G5. The dollar went up dramatically in 1985. The pound went to almost par with 103. Then they had the Plaza Accord. I had actually been called in to all that. And I warned them, I said, you're going to cause a crash, which was the 87 crash. And they stood up and said they wanted to lower the value of the dollar by 40% to help trade. You know, okay. I actually wrote to President Reagan at the time. I said, you do this, and you're going to create a crash in 2 years. And what I got from people, oh, gee, well, why? Because you're going to lower the dollar by 40%. You just sold a third of the national debt to Japan. Don't you think they're going to sell if they're going to lose money? You know, they just don't understand these things. So, you know, Trump, with the same nonsense that I've heard for decades, you know, it is just nonsense. You know, you lower the value of the dollar so you can sell more goods overseas. Well, all U.S. assets also decline. You know, whatever they bought in real estate, they suddenly lose money. You know, I mean, that was a big thing. You know, the Japanese bought Rockefeller Center and they lost a ton of money. It was all currency. So, you know, I don't know. They just don't teach international finance in schools anymore. But so The problem that you have is like the dollar rose dramatically on geopolitical issues for like World War One, World War Two. We've done, you know, studies, you know, you look at it and you see this, like the Suez Canal crisis, dollar rises. You know, the Cuban Missile Crisis, the dollar went down because they thought missiles were going to go back and forth between U.S. So capital always flees from wherever the event is. All right. So the geopolitical issue here, and you have to understand, is that the more we head towards war with Russia and or China, then that capital comes here. That pushes the dollar up. All right. I mean, if you're in Europe, you know, you're not going to leave your money in the bank, you know, when tanks are running down the street, blowing up the banks, you know. So you have that geopolitical trend, which people also don't understand. The Fed didn't understand it back in the Great Depression either. And so, you know, these are issues that, again, they change the direction of the domestic economy that's external to the Federal Reserve or the U.S. Treasury or whatever. They have no control over this. They can't dictate to the rest of the world, you know. I mean, the only way you could possibly do that is put in currency controls and you're not allowed to buy the dollar. But I mean, that's just going to cause an absolute complete chaos, you know. But so you have these conflicting trends. They're not unusual. As I said, the you know, you had the Plaza Accord. Same thing, lower the value of the dollar to help trade, but then they discount all the rest of the assets in the country, so you create a crash. I mean, you would think somebody in third grade could figure this out, you know, but in our politicians, it just seems to be over their head. So I definitely say the more you have war in Europe, the more money is going to come here. That will push the dollar up. But at the same time, you can see gold rise. And this is what gets people confused. And the stock market rise domestically, because some money will go in the stock, some money will go into the dollar, and some money will go in the gold. Not everybody buys the same thing. So, you know, if you look at what has happened over the last few years, you saw the Dow leading the S&P and the NASDAQ. That's showing you the big foreign money is coming in. They buy the big cap stocks. They don't buy NASDAQ. All right. NASDAQ is more retail. So it shows you basically how the money is actually moving. When the Dow is rising, it's foreign, big foreign money coming in. When the NASDAQ's rising and leading, okay, that's domestic retail. So just pay attention to, you know, what people do buy and what they do not buy and where the money flows are actually coming from.
Yeah, very interesting. And further on the U.S. debt, the U.S. Treasury bonds, you've written a lot about how some central banks like China and others are selling U.S. Treasury bonds, have been selling for quite some time, or not buying additional debt. Do you think the support by the U.S. of the cryptocurrency sector could put a bid on U.S. Treasuries because of the fact that you need collateral to support purchases of Tether and U.S. stable coins before you buy a Bitcoin, for example? Do you think that will work?
No, not really. They're not big enough to absorb the quantity of debt, the problem that we have. What you have to understand here is, and I know a lot of people always blame the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is just basically the punching bag for a lot of these people. They don't create the money. The bulk of the money is actually created by the Treasury through debt. And the reason is, back in the 60s under Bretton Woods, if you had an e-bond and you went to the bank and you said, okay, fine, here's a $100 bond, would you lend me 50 against it? It was illegal. All right. That's why we ended up where we're at. You had this theory that it was less inflationary to borrow than to print. Okay. But after Bretton Woods, what happened? Debt is now money that pays interest. You want to trade gold futures, you can post T-bills. Okay. So it's just, it's the same thing as cash, except it pays interest. So the bulk of the real money supply is coming out of the Treasury. And the Fed cannot, it has no power to stop that one way or another. This has led to a lot of confusion with this modern monetary theory. Oh, see, the Fed increased the its balance sheet and there was no inflation. All right. Not true. They also, the dollar is the reserve currency. So, as you said, like China had dollars, all the central banks as reserves use U.S. treasuries. So up to, at times up to 70% of the interest that we paid went outside the country. All right. So we have to understand, They increased the money supply, it appeared fine. However, the debt was being absorbed outside the country. So it wasn't creating domestic inflation per se. And also, what happens is that during a recession, people spend less. They don't trust the future, so they hoard their cash. All right. This is why the ECB in 2014 went to negative interest rates to try and force them to spend. they just took their money out of the bank. That was about it. They're not going to invest. They're not going to spend money unless they have confidence in the future. If you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, you're not going to spend it. Look, you can go back to, ancient Roman coins. I mean, the third century, you find hoards of 50,000 coins because you had like 20 some emperors, and within a short period of time, political wars and things of this, people didn't know what was going on. So they buried their money. You can buy Roman coins. I mean, from the third century, they're not really that expensive because so many were buried because of uncertainty. So this is a human nature thing that's been going on for thousands of years. Nothing's really, changed on that score. So with the whole debt issue, you take the neocons led by Blinken there in the Biden administration. They're complete idiots. I mean, he puts sanctions on Russia. All right. Then he threatens China. Oh, well, if you support Russia, we'll put sanctions on you. Okay. Well, China owned 10% of the U.S. national debt. And you're threatening China with war, then they're not stupid. What will happen in war? You don't pay that debt to them. So they started selling. All right. And this is where we're led by a bunch of people in Washington are just complete idiots. In doing that, if you can't sell the debt, two things happen. First, the long-term interest rates will eventually rise because you're getting less buyers. So you have to raise the rates. The market will raise the rates, not the Fed, on the long side. All right. Secondly, how do countries default? Historically, many countries have been in these Ponzi schemes where you're selling new debt to really just pay off the old. The default comes. It's got nothing to do with the quantity of the debt. People go, oh, $34 trillion, whatever. That's not the issue. It could be a quadrillion. All right. The issue is when nobody's willing to buy the new debt, then it all comes crashing down. So it historically, look, it's I mean, you can look on our site. We did studies of interest rates. The high on call money rates on the New York Stock Exchange was actually 1899, almost hit 200%. You know, the Great Depression, which was far worse, you know, hit 6%. I mean, so it's, you know, it's not, you know, it depends upon if the money was coming in, out, what's going on. But, you know, this is what we have to understand is that the sovereign debt takes place, the default, when you can't sell the new debt to pay off the old. All right. And that's, you know, basically a law of economics going back thousands of years. Doesn't matter, you know.
Meet the Cedar Owl, a new economics and finance publication with a focus on environmentalism. We combine the Austrian School of Economics and market environmentalism principles for investing in a sustainable future. Follow the link in the description to get to know the Cedar Owl better, understand our values, our mission, exactly where we're coming from, and the type of content that we release on a cyclical basis every Thursday. Join us in targeting outperforming portfolio returns while making a positive impact on society and the environment through technology. Subscribe now for weekly insights, investment articles, and exclusive content.
And on another topic, you've written a lot recently and in the past on climate and how we're going into a cooling period into 2029, I think, with the sunspot cycle and other cycles. Can you elaborate a bit more and the effects that could happen on agriculture?
Well, for example, we saw corn bottom out last August, starting to rise. I mean, I've published, you know, charts. The data is available, like on snowfall temperatures back to 1869 from New York City. Just look at a chart. I mean, this whole nonsense of global warming is not supported by the charts. You know, the largest snowfall took place in you know, since 1869. The biggest snowfall was 1996. You know, so I think the Industrial Revolution has been going on a lot longer than that, you know. It's very, I don't know, amateuristic. Oh, gee, I remember building snowmen when I was a kid. I don't see that today. So therefore, the world's global warming. You know, it's look, we just go through these cycle periods that you know, there's been warming periods, cooling periods, back and forth. We're heading into a global cooling period. What we have to be concerned about is also you're starting to see some upticks in volcanic activity. There is a book, The Year Without a Summer, and you know, it was when Tambora, you know, basically exploded, it threw so much ash into the atmosphere. It was snowing in July in New York City. They're called volcanic winters. When Mount St. Helens went up, it threw up so much ash, they said it was the equivalent of 10 years worth of pollution from cars. I mean, a volcano, you know, volcano is a pretty serious event. You know, you get a big one that's in like the seven category, it can change the climate. And then go back to the Byzantine Empire, the same thing. You know, contemporary, they were trying to figure out which volcano erupted. They said they didn't see the sun for a whole year. I mean, it was, then what happens is that the crops fail. The crops fail, then you get famine, you know, disease then spreads. It's like, it's all connected. We're going into the, we have, you know, NASA publishes these waves. We're going into wave, you know, solar wave number 26. And, you know, it's, there's a sunspot cycle generally. Do you get more of them or less? When you go into solar minimum, what the rays, we get more gamma rays from the sun than in solar, you know, maximum. A gamma ray is what, you know, will treat cancer with, will penetrate things. The theory is, I mean, this hasn't been proven yet, but perhaps that's when the volcanoes turn up, because there is a correlation between them, that maybe gamma rays penetrate the earth deeper and cause that stuff. We don't know. But all we do know is that there is a correlation to more volcanic activity during solar minimum than solar maximum. I mean, here you have, you know, this global warming policies from government. You know, a lot of criticism coming out. Even Mel Gibson just came out and trashed the governor of California, that they're reducing water to save the climate. They outlawed, you know, controlled burnings, things of this nature. This is you know, serious. I mean, in England, you know, I've got emails from clients there saying that the gas company said they were going to run out of gas within a week because it's been so cold. So what, you end up freezing people because, we don't want to create global warming, so let's reduce the gas. You know, this is insane. You had a girl in the Louvre throw tomato soup on the Mona Lisa. Oh, because it's an oil painting. Honey, it's linseed oil, not crude oil. All right. It's gotten to the point. It's just, you have just too many idiots. Oh, the word oil, that's bad. You know, it's, and they don't even know what they're talking about.
Yeah, very interesting observations. And in terms of investing, if we look at the perspective of investors from the G7 world, do you see the potential for sanctions on investing against G7 investors into China? So meaning somebody from the U.S. buying Hong Kong equities, could there be sanctions, maybe more on the U.S. side?
Yes, because you have a lot of these people just beating war drums, completely nuts. I would be very concerned that Europe, for example, will put capital controls. They'll try and prevent money from leaving Europe as they go into war. And you have to understand that these a politician responds only to his own self-interest for that immediate moment. They do far more damage to the economy long term than anyone can imagine. An example, you know, when the Federal Reserve was created in 1913, it was an excellent model to stimulate the economy. It bought corporate paper, not government. All right. The idea was that during hard times, banks wouldn't lend to corporations, so the Fed should. If the Fed bought short-term paper, all right, then the company didn't have to lay off people. I mean, that was the idea. Then World War One comes with politicians that, oh, well, we're going to have to issue a lot of debt. So then they instruct the Federal Reserve, no, you buy our debt, not corporate. All right, World War One was done, finished. Did they ever put it back? No. All right, so we end up in this crazy situation where nobody really knows what, you know, everything that the central bank was supposed to be has been reversed. Then FDR comes in, and why do we have all these branches of the Fed? Because in 1907, you had the 06, you know, San Francisco earthquake, and there were regional capital flow issues. So each branch was set up and was independent. So you would see interest rates at 3% in one place, but 4% in another. That was to attract capital to balance out the country. You know, Roosevelt came in, and to put his New Deal in, he usurped all the power, put it in Washington, one interest rate for all. Ever put back? No. So the Fed today is nothing close to what it was originally designed to do. But politicians do this all the time. You know, they take some action because of an immediate error or crisis, and they never put it back. When they were forming the euro, they came to me, and I met with them, and I said, look, this is not going to work. You know, you have to consolidate all the debts of Europe to compete with the dollar. And at the time, Helmut Kohl, the Chancellor of Germany, knew that if he allowed the German people to vote, they would have voted against the euro. He said he would have lost 7-3. So what did he do? He took Germany into the euro as a dictator, didn't allow the German people to vote. And his criteria was, well, they would be upset if we consolidated the debt, because then we're taking on Greece's debt. So basically his criteria was no consolidation of the debt. I warned him. I said, you know, this is not going to work. As a trader, okay, fine. You used to say, you know, buy the Deutsche Mark, sell the lira, whatever. You eliminate the currencies. Now I buy the bonds and I sell the Italian bonds. It's the same thing. So that's why the euro has never been able to displace the dollar. If I'm a big fund manager and I got a, you know, $100 billion, I can't buy the euro. I still have to make the decision. Do I want Germany? Do I want France? Do I want Italy? You still, you know, you have to go down the line. But, you know, they sold it as, oh, we'll all be paying the same interest rate. I said, no, you're not. That is only with one debt, you know. But this is, you know, I was told back then, they said, well, we just have to get the euro in. We'll worry about the debt later. That was 1998. They haven't done anything since. That's what I mean. It's like, forget it. So I get these calls from government, and people ask me, you know, why you get so frustrated with us? Because they don't do what I tell them to do. It's like, I warned you, don't do this. You're going to screw it up. And then they call, can you fix it? You know, and no.
Later.
It's just crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a final question. I mean, given all the current environment and risks, what are the best ways for people to protect themselves and investors in terms of protection or investment ideas?
Well, I think you have to understand that probably the number one issue is the geopolitical stuff, because that will have a tendency to cause capital concentrated in the United States. All right. and you're getting it from, you know, basically three regions. You're getting it from the Middle East, you're getting it from Europe, and you're getting it from Asia. All right. And what the neocons have done is, I mean, they were vehemently against Trump because he was against war. And so that's why you had Republicans for Camilla. And if you looked at who they were, Dick Cheney, et cetera, all the warmongers. And so all they've done is they've moved to Europe. So you have NATO constantly preaching war over there all the time. And NATO was actually even out trying to raise $100 billion, and they called it outright to Trump-proof the war. So that, fearing that Trump would cut off the money, so how do we keep this war going against Russia? And they couldn't raise all the money. But, I mean, this is... NATO is a threat to world peace. It is just a retirement home for neocons. And look, I've dealt with governments from Asia to the Middle East to Europe for 40 years. They're all the same. Okay. Any government will always act in its own self-interest. Any government agency will. I can tell you back in the 80s, I argued that we had to consolidate the CFTC and SEC. I said, everybody else has one agency. I said, if you don't do this, you're going to push basically real funds management offshore, which became the hedge fund industry. All right. Why? Because if I managed money and obeyed the laws with the SEC, I went to jail with the CFTC. They were completely opposite. SEC was fixed management fees. CFTC was basically whatever, as long as it's disclosed. You know, so you couldn't combine it. So a hedge fund became more or less the person that made the decision, bonds, stocks, commodities, whatever, in one fund, where you could not do that domestically. And I was told they would not merge the two. Why? We would have to lay off 50,000 people. So I've seen the memos and stuff. This is the problem with NATO. All right. NATO was very concerned that money was going to climate change and not to them. And they were actually having discussions. How do we remain relevant? All right. How do they remain relevant? Oh, Putin's going to take Europe if Ukraine falls, blah, blah, blah. They need to beat the war drums. If they can't do that, then what? If there's peace, why do we need NATO? I did a book, The Plot to Seize Russia. And in the very beginning, I put in there, why was there a coup against Gorbachev? It was a proposal for Russia to join NATO. And that's when they staged a coup against Gorbachev. That's when Yeltsin stood on the tank, don't fire on our people, and the coup failed. But that was actually the proposal, that Russia should join NATO. Why do we need NATO if communism fell? You know, the days of Khrushchev, we will bury you, etc. Okay, yes. Then you needed a strong defense, etc. But communism fell all by itself. That's why I think these neocons, and I know some of them, I've been to dinner with them. I mean, I think they're just, honestly, they're just ticked off the fact that Russia fell and they didn't get to shoot anybody. Yeah, and they grew up their whole life wanting war with communism, you know, and it's just an inefficient economic system, and it just completely collapsed.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's been a great discussion, and very great insightful points and observations. Martin, how can our listeners and viewers learn more about your work?
Well, we have a website, armstrongeconomics.com. It's free. You don't have to put in your emails or anything. We don't sell advertising. It's open. We try to provide it as a public service because, you know, how do we survive the years ahead? You're all on your own. All right. And we try to bring basically all the trends together so you can see them easily. Because like I said, it's the one thing you're going to face between here and going into the next 8 years is that we're looking at the collapse of government. These Republican forms of government, they're just corrupt to the core. People are starting to wake up about this. This is why Trump really got in. You look at Germany, AfD, you're seeing this rising on a global scale. People may be articulated differently, but they're ticked off at their government for one reason, another one, but it basically all comes down to the same thing. This is what we're beginning to see on an international basis. And just look at France. France is an example of what I'm talking about. Suddenly, corporate bonds, interest rates, went below that of government. That's showing this public versus private shift. So in other words, you trusted private, corporate, rather than government. Why? Government goes bust, you get nothing. If General Motors went bust, what happens? Goes into bankruptcy, they sell off the assets, you get something back. Right? Yeah. You get zero back when a government goes. French interest rates even went higher than Greece. So that's showing you Greece was supposed to be the basket case. This is France, the second largest economy in Europe. You know, it's showing that people are starting to say, what the heck is going on here? You're seeing the same thing, beginning to rise in Britain, Germany. They're really concerned the AfD, the far right, can actually win. We have to understand that, even the Democrats, they still fight amongst each other. Why did they lose? Oh, it was his fault. It was that fault. I mean, Biden didn't get out soon enough or what? No, it's your agenda. Okay. It's this whole wokeness stuff that, the transgenders and stuff, if you Google it, it was like the less than 4% of the population, but you made it sound like it was like, 99%, most people never even heard of it before. So what the heck's going on? They just went so far to the left. It was so crazy, that you actually left, you abandoned the middle class, the normal people that just, I just want to take care of my family, get along, and that's it. I don't care about all this other stuff. And I think you're seeing that rising just about everywhere in Japan and Australia. It's, the media, I think, just took it to another whole level. Then you had, the Biden administration involved in that, calling up people and cancel this person and that person. Sound like, Hitler in Germany, Papers, please,
Yeah, a lot of change is happening. But you have great information, insight on armstrongeconomics.com. It's been a fantastic discussion. Thank you so much, Martin. Thank you.
Well, thank you for inviting me. And just, remember, this is a shift from public to private. So expect some very interesting trends going into over the next 8 years.
Yep. Thank you, Martin.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.